This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Tell me what you think of my three scenarios that I outlined at the beginning, Mohammed. One is that, notwithstanding all the bombing, that the up-close and personal man-to-man combat in the alleyways, in the rubble, begins to prove too expensive to the Israeli armed forces, and pressure on Netanyahu gets him to call it off. Second scenario, that it becomes a wider war, with all-out war between Israel and other Arab countries, principally Lebanon, but Syria would undoubtedly quickly become subsumed in that, with the possibility that faraway countries like Iran would then be drawn in. And the third scenario is that Netanyahu wins in the absence of any countervailing force. He does smash open the gates of Rafah, and he does create an exodus into the Sinai desert of millions of people, whether Egypt likes it or not. How do you weigh those three possibilities?
Yeah. Right, so that's a really good question. So look, this is what I think. I think the third scenario that you just laid out is very, very unlikely. I've been watching very closely the Egyptian news and looking at the micro expressions and the body language and psychology of the Egyptian politicians. And it does not seem the case that they will open up the Rafah border, because I think doing that would, for them, it would create complete instability for their regimes. And that is something I don't think they can be bribed into changing their opinion on. So that's, unless they are blackmailed or there's military action, that's a different situation. I think that's what it would take. In terms of the first and second scenarios, look, I mean, in terms of winning, first of all, winning a war, what does it mean to win a war? So William Martel mentions that. And this is, I think, in the international relations literature, probably the most respected or the most prominent definition, that winning a war is effectively meeting your political objectives. The political objectives that Israel has set for itself right now is to destroy and nullify and annihilate Hamas. Now, the problem with that objective is that Hamas is not just a group of people, 30 or 50,000 fighters. Hamas is effectively an ideology. And Elon Musk said it correctly when he said that when you kill one Hamas, you create another. And as you see, you know, people that are, I've seen their own children, as we've started off this discussion by saying, or their own siblings being killed, are more likely to join Hamas, according to all theories of this kind of political theories and psychological theories, than ever before. So I think the objective that they've set for themselves should have been thought more closely about, because now they've made it impossible for themselves. Beating Hamas is almost an impossible. It's like catching a ghost, effectively, which is ironically what they said when they were fighting Hamas on the ground, which is the second thing, is that their ground incursion, and I've been following that closely as well, especially on Al Jazeera Arabic, and there is a particular analyst in the Arabic language called Faiz Dawadi, who is brilliant, and he's been analyzing what's happening. It doesn't seem that they're advancing. In fact, I mean, we've just looked at we're looking at Israeli figures now. If you look at the Israeli figures, not even the Hamas figures or anything else, just looking at Israeli figures, the IDF recently came on, actually, as reported by The Guardian, and said that, quote unquote, dozens of Hamas fighters have been killed. Now, just to think about that for a second, according to their own figures from the 7th of October, almost 400 IDF people have been killed, almost 400 of them, and 340 of them by Hamas. Now, what does that mean? It means that pound for pound, there have been more IDF that have been killed by Hamas than Hamas by IDF, by the admission and by the numbers of the IDF. Now, that's pretty shocking statistics, considering that the ratio of civilian or combatant to non-combatant death IDF has subjected the population to is exactly 100 to 1, or more than that, in fact, because there's 10,000 people that have been killed. And if we are liberal with our estimate, we say 100 people from Hamas are killed according to the IDF, then that's literally 1%, which is 100-to-1 ratio, which is no longer collateral damage. It cannot be 100-to-1 ratio, civilian to combatant ratio cannot be said to be collateral damage anymore. So having said all these things, I don't think that the Israeli forces are that good on the ground. And you know this very well, because you and I was watching closely when I was still a boy in the school. But you covered very well and very strongly, very diligently, very accurately the conflict in 2006 with Lebanon. And then I remember you very closely saying, because it was such a memorable thing that you said to the news anchor, that they're being whooped on the ground or they're being beaten on the ground. And that was by Hezbollah in 2006, and they were being beaten by 2006. And if you consider the military record of Israel of 7 wars, at least 3 of them could be said to be defeats, 2 of them in recent times on the ground, and 2006 being one of them, and in 2000 when they left southern Lebanon after the resistance as well there, that could be said to be a defeat because they did not fulfill their military objectives and they had to leave a particular place where they were. So if you consider Israel's record, like an MMA fighter or a boxer, if you consider their record on the ground, they have a very poor record on the ground. And so it doesn't seem, I think, on weight of all that we've just said, that based on the historical precedent and what we know, it seems that the following is going to happen, that they're going to continue. This is going to be very expensive for them. Either, as Norman Finkelstein said, that they're going to take the northern part of Gaza and they create a security council there. That's a possibility. And then that can be said to be some kind of a victory for them, which it would be to some extent, because some of their objective had been met, but it wouldn't be a complete victory compared to what they were, as per what they wanted it to be. Or they could, their biggest victory, which I think would be a victory for them, would be if the Rafah border opened and they could complete Nakba and there is no more Gaza and everyone leaves and they remove or ethnically cleanse or do whatever they want with the Gazan population. That would be, for them, probably the greatest victory they can imagine. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that the international community can allow that to happen, or would allow that to happen, or even that America would allow them to do that. On balance of probabilities, either that they're going to take the north of Gaza, a lot of which is uninhabitable land, what they call in Arabic mantiqa tusifr, literally a place where it's uninhabited, unarable land, and people are not using it, or that they're going to be repelled. I think these are the two possibilities, and that they'll probably cap it off at 20,000 civilians. Because at this point, there is reason to believe that the intention of the IDF, obviously, is to kill as many civilians as possible, as per what they've said themselves, like Daniel Hagari, Gotlib, and one of the guys who got suspended, I forget his name, but who said nuking the place. There's clear intention there that's coming out. So for them, I think in their mind, killing civilians is a victory. Killing children for them is a victory. They've got exactly the terrorist mentality on this matter. So, but that wouldn't be a victory. But it could be enough to placate kind of like some members or some aspects or some segments of the Israeli populace. These are the two biggest possibilities, either that the north part of Gaza will be taken, as Finkelstein says, as a security council, or that they'll be repelled altogether, which would be one of the biggest losses, actually, in modern times, or probably in their history, if that happens.
Well, I think that's a masterful summary. The only thing I'd say, nobody ever lost money betting on what the international community would stand up for. Let's hope that we don't see Tony Blair riding on his white charger in Sinai as the humanitarian coordinator of a new Gaza in the desert. Mohammed Hijab, you're a gentleman and definitely a scholar. Thank you for joining us on the Mother of
Thank
All
you so
Talk
much.
Shows.
Thank you.